Hello and welcome to another edition of Critical Q&A, the show where I answer your questions based on what you've left for me in the comments section of my Q&A videos or have sent to me by email at askchrisshelton@gmail.com. I've got a lot of questions to answer, so I'm just going to get right into it this week and see what kind of trouble can I get into now. All right, here we go. Kevin Reinstein. Chris, when you say you had to go to different orgs to solve problems with a personal touch, can you give an example? Also, I tried to read Dianetics. After 230 pages, I gave up. It is repetitive garbage. Regardless, looking at the bridge, the level of sophistication is amazing, as well as the infrastructure of Scientology. Do you believe LRH came up with everything himself? When I would go out on projects and missions for the C organization, we always had all kinds of interesting and different things we were doing. The very first one that I ever did back in 1995, shortly after I got into the Sea Org, was I had to go out to Kansas City with another Sea Org member, and we had to basically make their rent for them because they were on the brink of being evicted from their building, hadn't paid their rent in months. And this was a very common problem back in the 90s with Scientology orgs, with the local city churches. This was a problem we were solving all the time, is demanding, you know, putting demand on them to make money just to keep their doors open, much less to send money up. These class five orgs, these local city churches, as I call them, have not been viable operations and have not been big money makers for the church for a very, very, very long time. It's been pretty bad, pretty sorry state of affairs with those things. So the first one I ever did was going out there, and I was trying to, I'd never been to Kansas City before, didn't know anything about it. It was, I think, late summer. It was god-awfully hot and humid, and I had to try to get the place to get people in and service them, you know, try to create some goodwill, while my partner on the project, the one who was running it, she was going around with the person who ran the Kansas City org, and they drove around from door to door, you know, and trying to get people to give money to pay for services so that the org would be making income so that it would have money to pay its rent. And that was the first project that I did. Other projects that I did included going out and kind of boosting delivery, trying to get them to call in more people because they weren't doing a very good job of that. There were a group of people in 1996 who were trained up at FLAG for every organization in the world, teams of 2 to 3 staff. And within about a year or two, some of those staff started disappearing. They couldn't stay on staff. They weren't making it, but they were considered really top of the line trainees who had, you know, had been trained to do this very specific job. So one of the things I ended up doing was going out on projects to get these people back. You know, I went up to Seattle, and I think Portland and a couple other places, Orange County, and tried to, you know, get them to, you know, honor their contracts, come back into the church. And get back on staff, right? Because it was that big of a deal. So I had that kind of work to do, of course. And I've also talked about, you know, later in my Sea Org career, doing recruitment and doing, you know, staff recruitment, not new Scientology recruitment, but trying to get people to join staff at the churches, and also recovering people to Scientology, because we found in trying to get more staff, there weren't enough Scientologists, and so I had to go out and round people up. You know, again, knocking on the doors and, hi, you used to be in Scientology and now you're not. I'm here to see if I can help figure out why and maybe get you back, you know, was sort of the pitch. So, you know, things like that, all kinds of stuff like that. And I did a lot of projects and missions. And I generally had a pretty good time doing them, although some less than others, because there was always a tremendous amount of pressure. But I say I had a good time doing them because at least I was away from the base and I got to eat better and sleep better and actually be out in the real world and not stuck on the base So that's why it was a good time. It wasn't a good time necessarily because of the work I was doing. It was because of all the benefits of getting the hell out of the crazy cloistered Sea Org life. So anyway, that's there you go. Oh, and as far as you're asking for a twofer here. So as far as do I believe LRH came up with everything himself? No, I know for a fact that he didn't. And I've talked about L. Ron Hubbard's plagiarism and various things that he had ripped off from others. And there's just tons and tons of stories and information about this, from the study technology to organizational structure to the TRs even, you know, some very, very fundamental basic stuff. I believe, and I'll just comment very briefly here, but I believe that Mary Sue Hubbard had a lot more to do with stabilizing Scientology in the early days and getting it going organizationally and keeping it going than L. Ron Hubbard did. I think L. Ron Hubbard couldn't organize his way out of a wet paper bag, and that Mary Sue was the one who sort of strong-armed organizations into compliance and also kept him from going in and raiding all their money and making everything bankrupt like he had done with Dianetics. I think she put some degree of control on him and got that ship steered in the proper direction behind the scenes so that Scientology actually established itself and grew, whereas Hubbard, when he was running things by himself, had destroyed the organizations of Dianetics twice. You know, he went bankrupt, and then Purcell bailed him out in Kansas, and then he went bankrupt again. So the change when he made it into Scientology was that Mary Sue was involved. And that's pure supposition on my part. I haven't talked to anybody who could verify that. It is just my observation and supposition based on what I know of L. Ron Hubbard and his character and the timing of when Mary Sue came along and what happened with Scientology after that. So there's some interesting stuff for you. Total, total monkey. Do you believe studying the Bible as part of our cultural heritage and as a set of moral stories can be beneficial? I believe almost any education can be beneficial in some form or another, so sure. I will say that yes, I believe studying the Bible from a perspective of cultural understanding, certainly for the United States with our puritanical roots and whatnot, I think understanding the Bible from that cultural and sociological point of view could be beneficial. I think the same for the Quran or the Torah or, you know, any of those religious texts, provided you're studying them from that point of view. I don't think that they are beneficial as religious texts. Because I don't put religious faith in those books. I don't think they're the inspired word of God or anything like that. I don't think there's anything inherently holy about them. And I know that I'm, you know, going to run into a lot of disagreement on that from people who are religious believers, and I'm sorry, but that's what I think. So I'm not, you know, overtly, I don't think we should be burning Bibles. I just don't look at them that way. But I do think that there's things to be learned from religious texts of all kinds. And as far as moral stories, you know, I mean, to the same degree that Grimm's fairy tales, you know, are you know, moral stories, I suppose. But, you know, if you're going to take your morals from the Bible, you're going to have some pretty questionable moral standards, because the Bible calls for stoning women, for killing homosexuals, for genocide, and very, very, very clearly and repeatedly backs slavery. So I don't look at the Bible as a good moral testament of how to live one's life. There's horrifyingly bad things in the Bible. So that's my take on that. Jennifer Brewer, is it true that Jason Lee and his family have left Scientology? I saw a news clip to that effect. And 69 Tibbet, hi Chris, I've noticed that Jason Lee has joined the long list of celebrities that has left Scientology. If celebrities continue to leave, do you think the Celebrity Center will soon cease to exist? Yeah, Jason Lee did apparently speak out and say pretty bluntly that he had left Scientology. He is relocated to Texas. I think it's great news that he came out that way, and I think it was probably for him in his new community and area and with the life it looks like he's trying to establish. It looked like it was necessary that he finally come out publicly because he was viewed with skepticism and distrust by the community, and with good reason, because if he was a Scientologist, then he probably would have some kind of, you know, covert agenda. Scientologists have proven over and over again that they will say one thing and do entirely the opposite, and do so with a smile on their face. They have no moral compunctions about lying for the greatest good, for the greatest number of dynamics, as far as they see things. Scientologists are far from the only people who will do that, of course, but I'm just saying that Scientologists will do that. I don't think that Jason Lee coming out that way necessarily, you know, rings the bell of doom for Celebrity Center. I think that we're seeing a long-term drop in the value of celebrities to Scientology, though. Because you've seen since Tom Cruise was couch jumping and ragging on Matt Lauer, for which he had to apologize, and now, you know, having to tone down his rhetoric to the point where Tom Cruise doesn't say anything about Scientology now. The only people who really have come out and said much of anything positive about it in the last few years were Danny Masterson, who came off as a total doofus, John Travolta, of course, who's always got some puffy thing to say about it, and Kirstie Alley up until the last couple of years, where she's just gone radio silent. So I think that what Scientology has experienced is the double-edged sword of celebrity, where L. Ron Hubbard said, yeah, let's get celebrities involved, and let's use them to forward our lines, and let's get people into Scientology using celebrities. Well, that was a great idea, except what happens when the celebrities leave Scientology? They don't want anything to do with it anymore. They find out its bad side, and they start talking about it, which is now what's happening. Leah Remini, Lisa Marie Presley, now Jason Lee just saying, well, I'm not doing that anymore. He's not really speaking out, but that part of celebrity hurts Scientology in a major way because it combines with, you know, one, the other bad news that's out there about Scientology, which is aka the truth, and also people will gravitate towards and are fascinated by bad news or things that are controversial. And so that it feeds that, you know, the public sentiment goes in that direction more than it goes in the positive direction of Tom Cruise saying, oh, Scientology is the best thing that ever happened to me. And, you know, John Travolta saying, yeah, give it a shot, buy a book, you know. Less people respond to that message than they respond to the, oh my God, it tried, you know, Scientology tried to ruin my life. People go, oh yeah, I knew it. Because I think, you know, there's some cynicism there. So do I think that this means that Celebrity Center is going to disappear? Absolutely not. Celebrity Center is the most successful Class 5 org in the world, statistically speaking. It's the Celebrity Center, Celebrity Center International in Los Angeles, at that Manor Hotel, is classified within the Scientology hierarchy as a Class 5 service organization. It's not an advanced org, it doesn't do OT levels, it's not a St. Hill, it doesn't deliver, you know, the briefing course and upper-level auditing. It's a Class 5 org. And it's the largest Class 5 org, as far as, you know, I remember and know from the statistics, than any other org anywhere. And it's not just servicing celebrities. In fact, I think very little of its servicing was celebrities. They have a separate area for celebrities. They have separate course rooms for celebrities. They have special auditing rooms for celebrities. And celebrities do go there. But they were making all kinds of business in Hollywood with just regular people or fringy celebrity people, people who wanted to be celebrities, people who were also part of celebrity entourages would go there and do services. Nobody knew who they were, but, you know, they'd be part of it. But by far, most of the people who were doing services at Celebrity Center were just regular Joe public Scientologists, like, you know, you and me. So, so no, Celebrity Center is not going to cease existing anytime soon, just because celebrities are speaking out against Scientology. I couldn't say the same for the executives of the Celebrity Center. You know, they get enough of this kind of backlash and they're going to, you know, be out of there. A guy named Dave Pettit was the one who was running Celebrity Center almost the entire time that I was in the C organization. He had been working at Orange County Org, and then they recruited him into the C Org and got him to run Celebrity Center. And he was, you know, within the world of Scientology, an extremely successful executive, always winning the birthday game, the game of expansion they have in Scientology. And everybody thought he was a great guy, unless you happened to work at Celebrity Center. And I've talked to enough people who actually work there who clued me in on the reign of terror that that guy carried out against his staff. He was not a good guy. So that's what I can say about that. Andy Lesser, thank you so much for the extended discussion of Marty Rathbun. I actually just watched a documentary about him, as well as Stephen Mango's interview and an interview with the director of the documentary. I appreciate you clarifying that you don't know. Do you know if there have been other promising lawsuits against Scientology that have been dropped in any somewhat similar ways? No, I don't know of any that fell off that same way, where one day they were going and it looked like it was going in the right direction, even though it was going very, very slow, and then suddenly, wham, no, it was just dropped. I don't recall anything like that. The only thing that comes to mind as something vaguely similar, not the same at all, but vaguely similar was Bob Mitten was a guy who was a millionaire and apparently backing and financing the Lisa McPherson Trust in Florida, and they set up shop in Clearwater and they were kind of in your face against Scientology in the late 90s. And they were working to expose Scientology and you know, justice for Lisa McPherson. And Scientology took him out. And they managed to take out Bob Mitten through legal chicanery and got him eventually working actually, you know, against his own best interests. And he kind of disappeared. And his name is not remembered well by many, many people because of what he was made to do by Scientology when they had him over a barrel. It's a long story. I don't have all the facts. Everything I know about it is all second and third hand. So you can Google it because I can't tell you the entire story without doing a bunch of research myself. But I know that much. And I know that in the way that that he was, you know, very, very strongly against Scientology, and then suddenly, it's not the same in that he didn't have a blog, he wasn't posting, you know, pro-Scientology posts, but he was working against Scientology, and then he wasn't. And then he was doing things for the church, for their bidding. So there's similarities there. So that's all I can say about that. Bert Benz. Hello, Chris. Could you elaborate on what OT phenomena are? There used to be outrageous OT success stories in Scientology magazines touting the near superhuman benefits. When you were in Scientology, did you actually believe these stories? Did you know people who actually claimed to have had these crazy experiences, or was it all made up? OT phenomena are something that Scientologists crave. They love hearing about this. OT, of course, is Operating Thetan, and it's the highest spiritual levels of Scientology. With OT are supposed to come OT abilities, the ability to perceive things, you know, beyond sight, sound, smell, hearing, you know, the ability to make things happen with thought or spiritually, you know, the ability to postulate. It's a Scientology word for you know, positive thinking, and it manifests in the real universe, right? That sort of thing. Scientologists are suckers for OT phenomena stories. And the Advance magazine, which is put out by the advanced organizations, feature columns called OT Phenomena, where people submit stories of things that happened to them or that they did that they attribute to their advanced spiritual abilities. So, yes, I believe these things. All Scientologists believe this stuff. And when you get some distance from it and you actually see what most of it is, it's pretty goofy because a lot of it is coincidence or confirmation bias or this sort of thing. You know, I was looking for my keys and I didn't know where they were, and I postulated that they would be, you know, on the counter, and then I looked and there they were, you know, and you're kind of like, okay, so what, you're saying that your keys were, you know, like what, at the bottom of your closet, and you somehow thought happy thoughts and they just teleported to your countertop? Is that honestly what you're saying? You know, but nobody challenges them that way. So they never made to actually think through what they're saying and how ridiculous it is, right? Because that is kind of what they're implying, but they don't, you know, like I said, there's no challenge to it. So everybody just goes, ooh, that's so cool, you know. Or avoiding traffic accidents or needing to get somewhere. So I sped up time and I got to where I needed to go and I made the appointment in time, right? And you're like, okay, could it, you know, possibly be that maybe your watch was off? Or, you know, or, you know what I mean? Like, I so you're saying that you defied the laws of physics and time and motion, and somehow you traveled through time faster than everybody else so that you could make it to an appointment that you had to go to. That's really what you're saying. That's your claim. You know, like, they're ridiculous. But yeah, people do go for this stuff because they want to, and in fact, they need to believe that Scientology is making a positive impact in their life. And they want to believe that it's not just making them happier and more smiley, but that it's actually giving them some kind of ability in the real world, even though it's total nonsense. And I say it's total nonsense because you have these instances of this, but then there are other, there's many, 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 many more instances where if somebody could actually do those things, then let's see them manifested way more often, right? Like, okay, so you made it to that one appointment on time, and yet you're constantly late to course. You know, as the supervisor, I would never, you know, I would never say, well, where's your OT phenomenon now? You know, like, you know, I just, you know, that would just be, you know, like, horrifically bad taste, right? But, it occurs to me now, why didn't I do something like that more often, you know? Alex Kahn. Scientologists believe that surrounding the Earth is something that traps their Thetan and other Thetans here, right? What's that thing? Why can't they escape it? How high is it? Would SpaceX flights mean Thetans could escape TGAC and take over new bodies elsewhere? If so, why isn't Scientology investing in space travel research? Okay, this is a completely ludicrous idea, and I'm answering it, but just to show, actually, the kind of drivel and nonsense that would come out of Hubbard's mouth and not get a whole lot more follow-up. And it just makes this stuff up, you know, as he's going with these lectures. In the early 1950s especially, Hubbard had a lot to say about the whole track and space opera and intergalactic civilizations and stuff like that. Then later, in the early 1960s, during the St. Hill Special Briefing Course, Hubbard gave lectures 2 to 3 times a week, and he alluded also there to a lot of space, you know, intergalactic civilization, whole track stuff. And in 1966 or in 67, he came up with the Xenu story. So, so there's a lot of mythology in this body of work, and a lot of it is, it doesn't fit or gel well together. It takes real mental gymnastics to put all of his comments together in such a way that you get a picture that actually makes some degree of sense, because there's contradictory statements, and there's things he says here, and then he says this something about that over here that sounds like it doesn't really go with it. And it would just take me hours to lay it all out for you because it's pretty confusing stuff. One of those things that he talked about was the fact that there are screens, as he called it. He said there's screens that keep thetans on Earth, right? So that when you die, you can't just take off. You gotta go get another body here. You're prevented from leaving. See, now he says that, he just drops that line in the middle of a lecture, and then later he says that there are installations on Mars and on Venus that are controlling this population, and that he could, or you could, go to Mars, spiritually now, I'm talking about like, you know, you exteriorize from your body and you go to Mars, and that they'll trap you, that these installations have what he called theta traps, where you as a thetan could get sucked in with these electronic beams and screens and whatnot and force fields that they have in place, and that they will trap you and implant you and make you forget things and then shoot you back to Earth. So you're kind of like, you know, I would have loved to have, you know, sat Hubbard down at some point and said, could you just lay all this out a little bit more clearly? Because the things you say here and here and here, they don't really gel. They don't jive. You know, there's all this stuff that you're throwing around. You know, he talked about the pyramids being, intergalactic like wayports or something, and how there were invader forces fighting it out here on Earth, out of sight of the human civilization. Right? They'd have these battles and whatnot, and how Egyptian hieroglyphics show, characters with blast guns, you know, in holsters and whatnot. I mean, he just alluded to all kinds of stuff, and it's just sort of like off the top of his head, he's just throwing this stuff out there. And I don't think he really gave it a whole lot of thought as far as, you know, integration from one story to the next. I think he just thought clever thoughts and threw them out there, and just little tidbits here and here, and I don't think he ever thought that anybody was ever going to one day try to figure out this whole mythology of what is he talking about, you know? So there's a lot of this stuff all throughout the lectures of L. Ron Hubbard's works. And we used to eat this stuff up. And I'm just going to tell you straight up, I used to love this stuff. I just thought, because I thought that he had some concept or picture in his head of how this all laid out. And so I would follow all this stuff. And I was really, you know, a devil for the details. And I would really get into all this. And I was trying to piece together how this all worked and what the mythology actually was. And I didn't call it mythology, I called it truth. I thought this was how things had actually happened, right? So, you know, these screens that are supposed to hold thetans down on Earth, well, that's ridiculous, because, you know, how could that be when Hubbard then says in the lecture that he was cruising through the, you know, asteroid belt last night when he was, you know, exteriorized from his body. Like, nobody said, hey, Hubbard, how are you cruising around in the asteroid belt when you said there were screens that kept us all here on Earth? Like nobody ever challenged him on this stuff, at least not that I ever heard of, and not publicly. Nobody ever stood up in the middle of a lecture and said, dude, come on. You know, that never happened. So, you know, so this stuff is just, you know, there's a lot of all this mutually exclusive nonsense. It's fun. It was really, really interesting when I was in. I ate it up. I thought it was fascinating. And now I look at it and I just go, God, what a dope I was. So, whoa, it's time for flash answers. Ian Barkley, why do Scientologists say literally all the time? And why do they all pronounce it the same way, literally? There's a culture to Scientology that goes beyond the books and lectures, and there's just things that develop within the world of Scientology. And in fact, there's a video series I'll be starting this week where I'll be, you know, showing that through the story of some ex-Scientologists. So you can look for that this Thursday. That'll start. I think it's an important point that the culture, that there's a world that exists of Scientologists, and the agreements and language and things that they use are sort of their own thing. And there's a lot of slang that goes on there too, and a lot of ways to do things literally or literally might be one of those things. And I am positive that I have said this or used this a lot. Tracking, I'm tracking on that. Tracking, you know, as though I'm understanding what you're saying. That's another term that has been pointed out to me as Scientology slanguage. People in the real world don't tend to say that a whole lot. I thought it was just regular, you know, a regular English expression. But then again, I thought the word communicate was a Scientology word until I was about 11 or 12 years old, and my mom had to point out to me, laughing at me at the time, yeah, no, Chris, communicate is not a Scientology word, because the only people I ever heard use that word were Scientologists up until I was 12 years old. So anyway, that is why I think you hear Scientologists saying that. Subitman 12. Why is the term libertarian not used as a more correct label for Scientologists politically? Because not all Scientologists are libertarian. It's an attitude that pervades Scientology in a number of ways. There are a number of libertarian stances that I talked about in a recent Deconstructing Scientology video. But to broadly paint all Scientologists with that brush would probably be incorrect. They tend to go in conservative directions in a number of ways, especially fiscally. And but there are Scientologists who have very liberal ideas when it comes to social agenda issues and whatnot. But you know, that's all tempered with the, you know, Scientology rules too. Like, you won't find a lot of Scientologists who are truly and honestly pro-LGBT, even though they might mouth words that sound pro-LGBT, but Scientology beliefs and the Scientology structure does not allow for pro-LGBT attitudes. So it's a mix, you know. As with any group of people, you're going to get lots of different ideas. But there are definitely libertarian leanings, but I would never say they're all libertarians. Okay, so that comes, so we've come to the end of another episode. I want to thank you very much for all of your questions. Please leave me more. Just keep them coming. I love hearing from you guys. I love your feedback and your comments and your support. I really, really appreciate it. I can't tell you enough just how much I appreciate it. If you haven't checked out my most recent podcast with Matt Dillahunty, I highly recommend you do so. Matt Dillahunty is brilliant when it comes to critical thinking and nuanced reasoning. And we talk about that a lot in my most recent podcast on sensiblyspeaking.com. And of course, check out my merch on the critical merchandise site at Spreadshirt. Link is below. It's a great way to support me, support what I do, and get something for yourself as well. And of course, please consider becoming a patron. Your support is how I keep going. And I can't stress enough how much I appreciate it. And how really, really, it is how I keep going. I don't have other, secret sources of income. This is my job, and I hope I'm doing it well. And I hope you guys are digging what I am giving out. So, thanks a lot for coming around, and I'll see you guys next week.